life keeps happening every day. Say yes when possibilities come your way. You can't start wondering what to say. You never win if you never play. Say yes. There's mink and marigolds right outside, and warm white Cadillacs you can ride. There's nothing gained if there's nothing tried. Say yes. Don't say why. Say why not. Yes, I'll touch. Yes, of course. Yes, how nice. Yes, how happily. Thank you very much. Yes. Oh, yes. There's lots of chaff, but there's lots of wheat. Say yes. You might get mugged as you walk the street, but on the other hand, you might greet that handsome stranger you long to meet. Say yes. Yes. Don't say why. Say why not. Whatever lies beyond is not. Such and such. Yes, I'll try. Yes, I'll dare. Yes, I'll fly. Yes, I'll share. Yes, I'll happily. Thank you very much. Yes. Oh, yes. Yes. You can't look back on a chance that's lost. Say yes. The dice mean nothing unless they're tossed. The throw is usually worth the toss. The hope of summer denies the frost. Say yes. Yes, I am. Yes, I'll be. Yes, I'll go. Oh, yes. Yes.
What a tremendous joy the whole world has. And
well, it's definite that I'm a positive person, right?
No doubt, especially because your yes cannot be in conflict with anything. In fact, no, simply does not find your place in the world after this yes. Well, after this incredible overture of this very special, memorable program, I am so thankful for indeed Yes Answer, which Great Color Guild agreed, and indeed in her own temperament, her musical genius, she expressed huge yes to the world with her talent, with her devotion, with her endless and remarkable energy. And indeed, I felt that her eloquence as a person somewhat illuminating even more her electrifying talent. Let me introduce my dear guest, Mrs. Carla Guild, whose singing we just heard, and I couldn't find any better introduction than that. Carla, welcome. How are you?
And thank you, Lena. Thank you so much for inviting me. I am very flattered to be here on your program. It's a great delight to get to know you, and I expect this ought to be a lot of fun for both of us.
Oh, my goodness. Fun already started, And every second of it, I just will hope to feel with your personality, with your life, with your singing, and just so much happening in your life and continue happening. So I would propose perhaps that we will be somewhat starting from the beginning, your place where you've been born, which I understand was in Durham, Connecticut, which is not far away from New York State. And I wanted just to jump in to say that you've been extremely fortunate because your father was fantastically supported your talent, your career, and all your emotional development. And I would say, before I will ask you a question about your childhood, that your singing was almost, if not the first nature, but definitely your second nature, because singing was, no matter what you've been doing, whether you've been washing the dishes, I understand, or just being with life, singing was your perhaps even first language. So tell us a little bit about your memories of the childhood.
Lena, I was born in Connecticut, so I'm a Connecticut Yankee from the start. I was born in Durham, Connecticut, and we lived there part of the time, moved to Middletown and then to Bridgeport. Loved my life there. Started singing when I was 10 years of age. My father decided he would give me lessons, and he took me to a giant of a man. I mean, he was just a wonderfully smart singing teacher, and his name was Paul Schubert, very well respected in his profession. And I studied with Paul Schubert until I was in college. And I went to college in Hartford, still in Connecticut, at Julius Hart Foundation. But shortly after that, he was an engineer, and after the war, there was a lot of work in California, so we moved from one coast to the other, where I started studying at the University of Pacific in Stockton, California.
Okay. If I will go back just a little bit to your first teacher, it is a very well-known fact that the first teacher almost like a parent. If I understood correctly, you had operatic background and foundation coming from the teaching and coaching of this teacher. Is that correct?
Yes, indeed. He was very careful to see. I took three lessons a week from, I guess, when I was 11 until college age. But he was very careful to see to it that I didn't overdo. So he was very protective of a young voice. Although I gave my first concert at age 11, I was never allowed to get into anything professional at that early an age.
Oh, how wonderful. And that's why you have such a long years ahead of you with the singing, because we know so many sadness coming from the prodigies and some people who've been indeed like Mozart's father, who was so aggressive with his child's talent. So you had an opposite, such a fortunate childhood and such a fortunate professional development. Coming back to your operatic background, I have to say that stunning, limitless genre which you are singing is just overwhelming. I do hear your operatic background and your foundation in the way you're phrasing. Your articulation is just absolutely stunning. Every word I can understand, not only because of the meaning, but because it's matching music phrasing, as I mentioned to you in our previous conversations. So how meticulous and how demanding Mr. Schubert was with your classical work, what particular emphasis he made while you've been studying some of your classical repertoire?
Yes, part of my education with Paul Schubert was to teach me vocabulary. We had a section with learning new words and articulation, pronunciation, were very, very important. He stressed that
enormously, and I'm grateful to him for that, because it makes it possible for the serious singer to sing without a microphone if necessary. If you learn projection and articulation, you can really operate without a lot of additional augmentation.
Such a sensitive point you made, especially to someone who are somewhat skeptical towards electronic sounds. There are great benefits of it, and of course a lot of pop culture and modern singing today in the hands of electronic sophistication, but nothing, really nothing, can take place of natural, I would say natural couture of great voice. And I found that when you sing in cabaret jazz, I hear Rosina and I hear magic flute. Perhaps we can jump a little bit to some of your classical repertoire before we will talk about your jazz and cabaret singing, which is ahead of us, of course, with your music. So how much of the of your passion do you feel very uniquely attached to your classical singing? For example, in magic flute, you played a major role.
I think until I was out of college, my concentration was largely on the opera. I played and sang 4 or 5 operatic roles, and I sang in a church choir. But it was all arias and classic music, my early education, which was fine because it allowed my voice to develop. And then when I, later on, when there wasn't so much call for that sort of thing, I could go into cabaret-type singing, Broadway-type singing, because I'd already had the preparatory part of developing the voice.
Oh, to simplify a little bit, would you say that because of your operatic classical background, you could fly through any other genres with freedom and joy and somewhat with ease because you have that treasure of background?
I think that's important. Yes, I think that's a very valid point.
We will move on to your teenage and then more mature years of singing. I don't know whatever you like to emphasize. Of course, University of Pacific Times being extremely important, very significant. But I like to touch upon one disappointment when you felt that was a taste of a rejection, first painful experience where one of the schools didn't have place for you. I believe it was a Mill College.
Oh, yes, it was. Mills College in Oakland, California has a very fine reputation for classic music and education. And it was my idea that I was to transfer from Julius Hart Foundation when we moved to California to go directly into Mills. But unfortunately, my timing was not so terrific. And it was after the war when a lot of veterans from World War II were coming back into the system. And they, of course, deserved and got first accommodation in the spaces that were available in the universities. And so when I got to Mills, I was only 18 years old, and they felt that it wouldn't do me any harm to lay out for a year and come the following year into Mills. And they made space that way for a lot of servicemen who wanted also to get a good musical education. However, on my way back to my home in Sacramento from Oakland, I passed the University of Pacific, fell in love with this gorgeous campus, and stopped in to talk to the conservatory head, Dean Elliott, to discuss the possibility of possibly starting school there. And he was very kind to me, auditioned me, and persuaded me to come take a full scholarship to study there. And I was intent on getting back into school. And so that's how I happened to go to the University of Pacific instead of Mills.
Well, actually, that that was not there, because you met with John Doggett Powell, who was, I understand, so to speak, imported, as you express yourself, with his lyric opera from Chicago. And you had the opportunity then to actually perform in this establishment, and you perform Gretel in Hansel and Gretel, which is a tremendously significant role. What is your memory about that?
The Pacific used to have a summer program, a music camp for young people, and they would import John Daggett Howell and Elizabeth Brown. Both were well-known opera singers at the Chicago Lyric Opera, and they came to run an opera program for those students who wished to study opera. And that year, they were doing La Traviata and Hansel and Gretel, Humperdinck's Hansel and Gretel. I, of course, was just a kid and not a very big one. but I did win the role of Gretel. And the roles in Traviata were Chicago singers, professional singers that they brought in to do the roles, and then students did the smaller parts. It went very well, and everybody was extremely pleased with the job we did, and it entitled me to receive an offer for a full scholarship to go to Chicago to study with John Daggett Howell. However, my dad wasn't too pleased about letting me go that far at such a young age. So the following year, I returned to Pacific to study more. And again, the Chicago Lyric Opera came for the second summer. And that year, my dad said it was okay. I could go with them back to Chicago to study at Roosevelt College, where John was teaching.
Certainly your persistence and also respect for your father's opinion, which somewhat very unusual for a young woman, but I guess you had such a unique connection to your father, and how wonderful and admirable that he was by your side, and as I mentioned in the beginning of the program, understanding your talent, not being musician himself directly, but something tells me that his soul was music at his own right, even though he was at a distant profession from this. But something tells me very strongly that he had intuition for music, and definitely for something which was so dear to yourself.
Yes. I was very lucky to have two parents who were very loving, very protective, and instructive in a very positive manner. He used a lot of common sense in guiding me, and I'm grateful for that.
Well, to make our program even more colorful, I would perhaps to interrupt our classical discussion and to bring back your cabaret jazz genre, because I feel that it is time for us to reunite with your singing. And then after this, we will be talking about your performance of Pamina in Magic Flute, which gave you a full scholarship to study in Chicago Lyric Opera Company. And then we will move on to the next phase of your life. So if you do not mind, I like to offer and to listen to your Just in Time song, because I feel it's just in time to play it.
Oh, okay, that sounds good for me. That sounds very good.
Let's hear it.
Just in time, I found
just in time. Before you came, my time was running low. I was lost. The losing dice were tossed. My bridges all were crossed. Just in time, you found me just in time, and changed my lonely life that lovely day. Just in time, I found you just in time. Before you came, my time was running low. Lost. The losing dice were tossed. My bridges all were crossed. Nowhere to go. My darling, now you're here. And now I know just where I'm going. No more doubt or fear. I found my way. For love came just in time. The heart you sing to. One smile that cheers you. One face that lights when it nears you. One man you're everything to. Fame, if you win it, comes and goes. Where's the real stuff in life to cling to? Love is the answer. Someone to love is the answer. Once you found him, made your world around him.
Difficult to start a talk after this singing and speaking through music. I have a very special guest, Mrs. Carla Guild, whose limitless genre abilities are so close to our hearts, to our souls, with just about anything her voice touches. We just stop before this magnificent singing, just in time, and we talked about beginning of your more mature young years, and I mentioned that singing Pamina from Magic Flute gave you an ability to have a full scholarship studying with John Doggett Howell in Chicago Lyric Opera Company. How significant that was in your singing life?
I started studying with John, and he was doing, at the school, Roosevelt School, he was doing the, Figaro, The Marriage of Figaro, sorry. And I was chosen to sing Susanna, which was the lead, as you know, Lena. And I sang with some very fine voices at that school. We had some very professional and very fine, but it was a school situation, not a professional. I was not paid at that point. We did a great job, and we had a number of people from the Metropolitan that flew to Chicago to hear our performance. They were so impressed with the way we put it together. I'm very proud of those days.
Well, maybe I confused you. Maybe it was my mistake that you've been awarded a full scholarship. I thought it was your role of Pamina in Magic Flute.
Well, yes, Pamina, I did at the University of Pacific, and it was the role of Pamina that impressed John, who invited me to take a full scholarship at Roosevelt, and at Roosevelt I sang Susanna.
Oh, correct. So we're in the right track there. So we are coming back for a while to classical repertoire. At the same time, hearing your jazz cabaret singing, again, my own personal perception of absolutely phenomenal skill of Richard Ativa, of bringing out small motifs which make such a huge difference in a long phrasing. All those elements are so beautifully polished, and I could see that you did enjoy studying step by step all this classical routine, but yet irreplaceable artistic elements, which serve you so well in all of your genres, in all of your performances, including singing in a choir. I'd like to talk a little bit about this, because the last thing anyone would imagine, that with such an enormous talent as a soloist, you, however, didn't have much of the ego, and you did sing in a choir for no more, no less, but for 23 years. I'm sure there were some benefits of doing so. Could you share this with us?
Yes, of course, church music is a very big part of a singer's repertoire. Oratorio is something that you really have to sing in a choir in order to have the experience of hearing all the parts. So it was very beneficial for me to have had choral experience as well. And I did that from the time that I was quite a young woman, before I went to college, and during my college years, I sang in the a cappella choir at Pacific, which was highly thought of, and we toured nationally with the a cappella choir, which was great fun. I loved every moment of it under Russell Bodley, who is our choir director. And I think it was a big contributor to my repertoire and to my knowledge of church music.
You know, it's just a simple confirmation that no matter what you do, no matter what you're singing, it's about singing and it's about music much more than about yourself. I have particular privilege just to speak with you and not to sense any gram of ego or any kind of an imposition of your persona over the music quality or musical commitment. I just wanted to make a very strong point here, I believe, that the younger generation who is not quite as equipped and not quite as driven by the classical traditions should and have no choice but to take your example, to listen to your singing, hopefully to meet you at your own rights in person. And the fact that you are helping and supporting young art and people who are in your field trying to start their business makes me believe that our world certainly has a future because of people like yourself.
Yes, it's very important to understand that kids need a varied background, and a lot of time has to be spent in various parts of musical training. I was just lucky. I was really lucky to have very good instruction, and I think that was a big contribution in my achieving whatever I achieved through my musical career. I think we should get to the fact that at that point in my life, I met my husband, Ralph Gild.
Sorry, interrupting you. You absolutely telepathically read my mind. Because I was just about to say that your husband now deserves to be part of the picture and a part of the program. Fortunately, we do have some extra time after an hour. Station did recognize your presence and very fact that you're such a special guest. So we do have some extra time for your life and for your music. So there is a certain place for your husband. And indeed, this is a tremendous page in your life with a lot of symphonic development where your career, singing, your personal events, your motherhood merged together. And we are just entering tremendously exciting collaborative parts of your life. So let's talk about your husband.
Okay. I met Ralph when I was 18 years of age, and we dated in college. He followed me back to Chicago, and much to his mother's dismay and disapproval.
And your father's as well, I'm sorry.
And my father's as well. But, you know, when you meet the right person, and Ralph and I had so much that we loved together. He loves theater. He loves music. He actually came from a tap dancing family, and he knew how to tap dance. And so we had a lot of fun. We used to see a lot of theater together. And I think we were both very lucky to find each other at such a young age. We were married at 21. And we have been married for 60 years. It's so. And it doesn't feel like that at all. It's because it's been a wonderful, rewarding, and great experience. I am a lucky woman.
Well, you are life proof of it because somehow you managed the most profoundly difficult combination. Establishing your career, and even though you've been 18, but you already knew what you've been doing, you've been already well educated by that time, you've been performing. So your husband came at the right timing, I would say, because sometimes time and timing perhaps would not live together, but in your situation, timing was just right. I understood that you had some financial challenges, it was some geographic changes because at that time your husband did not like much of a Chicago, so you went to California where he was more familiar with, and his old boss suggested some jobs with some selections of various radio stations he can work. So it was a challenge, it was an adjustment, but my feeling was that his tap dance was a rhythmic foundation, and your voice was an artistic travel. So it was just a soulmate connection where you had rhythm and melody together. I cannot find any better combination.
Being young married people, however, we were very surprised to find that we were going to have a baby. In Chicago, life was expensive. Ralph had a job, but was selling in a radio station. And I had a job working for Monsanto Chemical, but we didn't earn very much money. And life in Chicago was just extremely expensive. And we realized that the kind of school and so forth that we could provide in Chicago was just not good enough for the baby that was coming. So we decided to go back to California, where Ralph's original boss promised him a job in any one of the three markets that he owned radio stations. And we chose Sacramento, California, went back there, had two children, 22 months apart, and had a fun experience. It was fun all the way. Ralph loved his job in Sacramento and did extremely well. He became manager of the station. Then he became the owner of the station. He owned two stations, not simultaneously, however, in Sacramento. And I got a job singing with the music circus there. They came in and did 10 shows a season, and I worked for them for three seasons. So I learned a lot of Broadway shows at that point in my musical development, and I made a little money to help, which was needed and lucky enough to provide.
Well, I'm jumping a little bit ahead before we will hear you another song and reveal the secret that you have 5 children and 17 grandchildren. I don't
know
when you have time for music, but evidently you have time for all of this. And if I understand correctly, your husband wanted to have those 5 children. Perhaps I'm whispering more than even you did.
He was delighted. He was an only child, and he wanted a big family. And I love Ralph, and I want to give him everything he wants in life. And the 5 children were something that we could do.
Well, on this wonderful note, very loving note, we will hear another lovely performance of Don Juan, which is going to be so, so delightful, with so much phenomenal sense of humor. Again, fantastic melodies and such memorable performance. Paula Gild with Don Juan.
The house we moved in, the house we grooved in, the way we waltzed across those marble floors, you sure did look deluxe in your white tie and tux, up in that big white house that is no longer yours. Don Juan, your money's gone, and when your money's gone, Don, your baby's gone. Don Juan, your baby's gone. Stiff upper lip now, Don, you'll have to carry on. The yacht we sailed on, the yacht we whaled on. I gotta tell you, Don, I love that yacht. You used to look so cute in your white sailor suit, up in that big white yacht that you've no longer got. And when your money's gone, Don, your baby's gone. Don Juan, your baby's gone. Stiff upper lip now, Don, you'll have to carry on. Don Juan, when you had money, Don Juan, I was your honey, but Don, it's gone, and so am I. The jet we cruised on, the jet we boozed on. That was the highest I have ever flown. Your kisses were so sweet at 30,000 feet up in that big white jet that you no longer own. Don Juan, your money's gone. And when your money's gone, Don, your baby's gone. Don Juan, your baby's gone. Stiff upper lip. Now, Don, you'll have to carry on. No hard feelings, Don. Say the goddamn fee. Give me a call when things turn around. Bye now.
I felt I was in a theater. It's so picturesque. In fact, it's a great privilege because I created my own theater. I am absolutely limitless in my freedom to have an image of your dance, of your virtually inseparable feeling of the movement, of the melody. And I love this music, particularly with this touch of ostinato basso, which created such a steady rhythm. And yet, you've been so frivolously dealing with that.
It's a funny song.
Oh, my goodness, what a spectacular performance. I'd like to talk a little bit about this music circus establishment, because I understand it was an equity company that produced 8 Broadway musicals each summer.
Yeah. Lewis and Young was the first company to have tent shows, and they called them music circuses. It started in New Jersey, and then they kept the one in New Jersey and opened up in Sacramento. And it was Sacramento where I worked. And it was a lot of fun. But by that time, I had 2 small children. I had Mark and Gail. And so I would have to get up early in the morning, get the kids up, feed them breakfast, go and get the babysitter, race into Sacramento. We lived out in Town and Country. Race into town, practice all day, rehearsing for the next week's performance. At 4 o'clock, we'd be finished. I'd get back in the car, race back to the suburbs, take the sitter home, feed the kids, bathe them, put them to bed, get the sitter, race into town, and play that evening's performance. So I was one busy chick, let me tell you. But I loved every second of it.
Certainly, God gave you this energy, and I think it's probably fuel of your love for singing, that while you've been doing this just extraordinarily challenging work with the schedule and attending your second profession, which I don't know how much easier than your singing, probably equally important, just very different, to be a mother. But all of that did not stop you from continuing performing. I almost forgot about the fact that you had so many children, because the sunshine...
Just 5 children.
Just five. And again, 17 grandchildren.
Grandchildren, yeah.
Cannot forget that. I still have to say that your self-discipline as a person and your desire to be an artist probably was the best metronome in life you can have, and God gave you this gift. So speaking about your children, I have to say that my son actually knows quite well your first son, Mark, and Mark was at our house once, and indeed he exhibited in his own right love for classical music, and also singing, no more, no less, just from the spot, he sang one episode from Bach music, and my son just accompanied him very briefly. So you certainly spread your talent and love for music and all this energy and sensitivity to your children, and everyone, I'm sure, took it in their own way and their own right. Now, come back to your family. You've been making quite a major decision, because I understand your husband was ready to go to New York. He had a very attractive professional offer, and actually he did leave for New York, and then you followed him with Mark. And let me stop right there and ask you, how much of a change and how much of a transformation that was from your living in Sacramento and become part of a New York life?
Oh, my, it was a great change. We had arrived at a pretty comfortable money level, because Ralph did extremely well in Sacramento, and he took a pay cut. He took half of his original salary, and we moved to New York, where everything's worth twice as expensive as they had been in Sacramento. So we had to make do with a very, very simple house on the railroad track and two children. But we selected Bronxville as a community because it had a fine school, and we had both Mark and Gail at that time, and Mark was going into the first grade and Gail into kindergarten. And so we decided we would just put up with something less than terrific, so that we could get into a good school district. And it wasn't long, 3 years, and Ralph started to do extremely well again. So we moved into a smaller house. And then from there, in a few years, we moved into a lovely big house, which was our home for nearly 40 years. And our life in Bronxville was great. It was wonderful. The kids were in a very good school. We made a lot of wonderful friends. And Ralph's business did extremely well. But at that point, I decided that I had been a housewife and a mother singly enough. So we hired a woman, Mary Strong, who is with us to this day. She's worked for us for 50 years. And she took over all the things that I was not good at in taking care of a house, and allowed me a second career. And I started selling real estate, which was fun, great fun. I loved it. And I did very well. In fact, I'm very proud of the fact that I sold the most expensive house ever sold in Bronxville Village at that time. And the amount of the sale was $350,000, which sounds like peanuts today. But you have to remember, this was many years ago, and no house had ever sold for that much. But I did, and I put a little money aside in order to buy the big house that we moved to, and to help with the renovation, which made me very proud.
Well, you also became interior decorator, which I don't think much of a surprise because of your artistic nature, but I frankly was quite shocked. It was a big surprise to know that you've been so successful in real estate, because, yes, being with the people, it's all your life, but to sell something to people, that's something a little different, area of expertise. And it just tells me that no matter what you do, you feel on stage, you feel driven, and you're just so irresistibly communicative. And I understood that, indeed, you saved almost $30,000. I'm revealing this because it's in your biography.
That's true.
Right. Home, and you've been just so pleased to live in Bronxville, which is, by the way, extremely unique community. It's a small village with willingness of people who are expressing their desire to be in this village for many, many years. There are just wonderful roots of culture, history. Yes, of course, it is extremely pricey now, 350 $1,000, it is like an antique price. But if we will put just commercial site, just for 1 second, on a site, I would say that it is still extremely beautiful, uniquely feeling like a family community. And the fact that you felt here very comfortable with your children is not a surprise. However, you were not here for all the time. You probably felt that your children are grown. And I believe that after last child entered the college, you moved into the barometer of life, which is Manhattan, New York City.
Yes. We sold our big house when the kids were all on their own, and we moved into New York City. We lived at Trump Park, in right on Central Park South. We had a wonderful apartment, and Ralph didn't have to commute anymore, which pleased him no end. But he went on working and doing very well. And I had my little decorating business at that point with a very good old friend, Ann Pepys, who was very, very smart, very skilled, and taught me many good things. And we had quite a little business going for about 15 years. And we decorated only offices of top executives, so that I never was in the business of decorating houses, per se, just offices, excepting from my own and a few friends.
And I believe the name of your business was InDesign.
InDesign, yes.
Right. Well, I like to make another musical stop, which will still bring us back to your main purpose in life, and that's your musicianship, your artistry. So we're going back to your singing, and we're going to have a pleasure of hearing the colors of my life. And you certainly didn't miss any colors in your life. So let's have a proof of it.
The colors of my life are bountiful and bold. The purple glow of indigo, the gleam of green and gold, the splendor of a sunrise, the dazzle of a flame, the glory of a rainbow, I'd put them all to shame. No quiet browns and grays, I'll take my days instead, and fill them till they overflow with rose and cherry red. And should this sun rise, the dark one day, the colors of my we'll leave a shining light to show the way. Your reds are much too bold. In gold I find no worth. I'll fill my days with sage and brown. The colors of the earth. And if from by my side my love should roam, the colors of my life will leave a shining light to
one never will feel tired to find more and more nuances in your singing. Frankly, I even heard some moments of Slavic romance because of the warmth of your voice and such a beautiful, sensitively, intimately oriented to human soul intonation. It's just so magnificently beautiful, your colors. And I guess that will be a lovely bridge to go to your reuniting with the singing in a full force, because indeed in New York City, you started to sing with David Lewis.
Yes.
So let's talk about that.
David and I work together on as regular a basis as we can. He's in New York and a very successful coach. He coaches many, many top stars, and knows everyone in show business, which makes him a very valuable friend, and certainly has helped me in developing my vocal abilities in the Broadway area. Now that I'm in Florida, I sing for parties, private parties, and I don't really do anything professional. It's fun to be to do it just for fun now. But Ralph and I are very interested in helping other young people, and we are on the board of the Dreyfus School of the Arts. And they turn out some amazingly talented kids. And we are on the board of the Palm Beach Drama Works, and they do small original plays, and they bring in Broadway cast, and that also is something that we love theater as well as music. They do mostly straight plays. But we have been on the board of governors for the opera. I was on the board of the Florida Ballet. Unfortunately, the community didn't support it enough that it's gone out of business. But we're doing all we can to preserve the playhouse, the Poinciana Playhouse here, right in Palm Beach. We're hoping that we can save it. We're not sure. But you can see that I am still very much involved with the arts, and I love every second. But I'm still singing. I'm no child, but I'm still singing.
Well, no one, I should say, not only myself, needs to be convinced in that. And I just wanted to make one little, but I think important correction when you said that you're not singing professionally. I cannot imagine you not singing, but only professionally. But I'm so thrilled to know that you're doing this for your absolutely continued, genuine pleasure, that you do whatever is shining to you your own rights, your own places, and that you still have this tremendous joy of sharing your gift. And, you know, there's very unofficial observations, I would say, that great artists have a long life, especially if they haven't been abused by either their teachers or other circumstances. And I would say that you had nearly golden life because of your beauty inside out. I like to conclude with one thought which I just had a little touch in the middle of our program, and thank you profoundly for being so generous to the young artists. Personally, in my own way, with my own company, I will do whatever I can to engage people like yourself, to give this standard of not only being, so to speak, perfect for what you're doing, but to be devoted and not to measure necessarily amount of money can be earned from phenomenal performance, which unfortunately sometimes in the field of celebrity, pop culture musicians, but just to resurrect this level of performance, finesse of appreciation for that. And with the people like yourself, young people who indeed struggling financially, unfortunately, so strongly, have a future. So personally, I wanted to thank you so much, you, your husband, and your colleagues who are so devoted to this goal in this country to preserve and continue this fantastic development, which is so important for us, like never before, to continue to be our human with love for music and art. I think we all must conclude our program, and before we will be ending with your another song, I'd like to give my very dear guest, Carla Gilt, her last words, her last thoughts, hopefully for the future of potential maybe another program. Carla, please, your final thoughts.
Mina, it has been a great pleasure to be with you. I have enjoyed our conversation very much. I hope to meet you personally soon, and I would like to invite you to come and stay with us in Palm Beach. We'd love to entertain you because we have been, I feel I know you well from just this conversation. I thank you, and it's been a delightful experience, and maybe we'll talk soon again. Thank you.
I don't see any other way. Thank you so much for your warmth and for such an open and genuine invitation. I did feel that we had a wonderful, memorable dialogue, but it is particularly privilege for me to feel that you've been comfortable and that we are starting our friendship, our music, and perhaps, who knows, some collaboration together. On this note, I wanted to thank my very special guest, Mrs. Carla Gilt, whose artistry in every frontier as a singer, as a performer, as an actress, as a musician, as a mother, and as a beautiful wife. And on this note, we will hear her another song among many, which calls Little White House, which will warm our own homes with our own souls.
Who could be blue knowing there's you house with a little white fence made of pickets. A house on the hill where if nature consents, we'll have crickets. At the end of the day, you'll come home to your favorite easy chair, your favorite pipe, and your favorite type of a girl are there. We'll have a little pink boy and a little pink girl, then another. A little snub nose and a little spit curl like her mother. With you,
little white house with a little white fence made of pickets. A house on the hill where if nature consents, we'll have cricket. At the end of the day, you'll come home to your favorite easy chair. Your favorite pipe and your favorite type of a girl are there. We'll have a little pink boy and a little pink girl, then another. A little snub nose and a little spit girl like another. With you, long as there's you with me, the only thing blue is the sky. With you, long as there's you with me, the only thing blue.
Well, I'm saying until soon, if Carl is still with us.
Yes, I am.
Thank you so, so much. I will conclude by wishing Carl many, many years of memorable moments with the music, her family, her friends, and tremendous help for the young generation. Carl, have a wonderful time. I would say until soon. And on this note, I will conclude my program. I'm Lena Life with my usual weekly programs. And on this note, I will say goodbye to PBS. They're very handsome people there. And until next week.